you know, at APP, we did a study and found out that 98% of the people could not name you who the number one player in pickleball was. You go to an advertiser, you know, or a sponsor, and they want to advertise on a name person. They don't care. They want to advertise in pickleball.
Right, right.
Okay? That's what they care about. Whether whoever you bring to the table to say, well, I have this person or that person, is irrelevant to them.
Welcome back to the Future of Pickleball. I'm your host, Paul Olson. We're broadcasting this on Selkirk TV. Like every show, I've got the big dogs in the room. The man that I've got on board today, Byron Fresso, is a serious, serious guy in the pickleball game. Byron, welcome to the Future of Pickleball.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you for having me.
I really have looked forward to this. I don't know if you remember this, but you and I met in 2015 in Minnesota, a long, long time ago. It's kind of interesting. It's interesting. There aren't that many people that I know from the sport that go back as long as I have when I first met you. So that's kind of a fun recollection for me.
Yeah, I think that was the National Senior Games at that time in Minnesota.
Yeah, absolutely. But before we get started with this, what I do want to ask our viewers, the caliber of people that I'm able to get on this show that are really making the sport go where it's going, leading it and driving it for the future, like Byron, please hit the like and subscribe buttons. If you would please give me your comments about my show. Tell me what you like, didn't like. If you've got any ideas on what you think would make great content for the future of pickleball, please put it in the comments. That being said, let's get into this long history of Byron Fresso. And tell me a little bit about, well, hang on, I'm going to stop there right now. Before I start there, I want to talk about what your sports background was. You've had one heck of a career in the sports world. Tell us about that.
I started off as a young table tennis player in my home country. I was born in Guyana in South America. And table tennis, volleyball, and cricket were my first love. Back then as a youth. But the one sport I excelled in, actually it's two I excelled in, table tennis and volleyball. I made the national junior team for Guyana and played in the Caribbean Junior Championships. I was the runner-up in the Guyana National Junior Championships. At the time, I was 14 years of age and made the team. I was the youngest member of the team. Seems like it was always the youngest in everything that I did at that time. And so I played since I was about five or six, I started playing table tennis. And if you think of table tennis in a third world country, it's not a big fancy table nor a big fancy racket. A table was putting two desks together along with books to make a net, and you use a hardcover books as your racket. And we were able to get some balls, and that's what we played. That's how we learned to play. But it's a sport I excelled in. We had a Chinese coach that came to Guyana back in the early 70s, in 1971 to be exact. I was 15 years of age. And he trained us. He trained both the junior and the senior national teams. And I got pretty good. I got up to a 2100 level player as a junior, and then life got in the way in terms of school, because academics was something my parents focused on. It was the only way in which I could get out of Guyana, so to speak. I mean, I came from a very poor country, and I lived in a very small village where we went to school barefooted. I had to paddle the canoe to get across the river to go to school. But being neither here nor there, sports and education were the two ways in which to get out. And having excelled at table tennis, I was able to get on the national team and to travel with the national team. Volleyball came a little later. Volleyball came and I started playing volleyball at age 14, but didn't make the junior team. I did, however, make for 3 years in a row the national senior team volleyball. I represented Guyana in volleyball for 3 years. And that was during the period of time that I lived in the United States. I had come to the United States at age 16 to go to school. I went to Georgia Tech in Atlanta and really took up volleyball and played it at a very serious and high level. So that's my two backgrounds. Later on in life, I got involved with racquetball and I became an open racquetball player. I was on the board, the Southeastern Board of Racquetball Association. And so somehow or the other, I always seem to have gotten involved in the back end of the back office things of these sports that I get involved in, that being racquetball, volleyball, table tennis.
Selkirk just announced this new product drop, and it might be one of my favorite yet because it's pickleball shoes. Selkirk specifically designed these shoes with pickleball in mind, and there are some really cool features that you need to know about. Both of these shoes have really good support in all directions. Again, you need lateral, horizontal, because you move every single way on the pickleball court. Another feature that they both have is the type of rubber sole that they use. This is meant to grip the court and also last a long time. Both shoes have this mesh top that makes the shoe breathable, and there are two models that you want to know about. The first model is the Court Strike, and the second model is the Court Strike Pro. Now, the difference between the two is this one's probably going to be a little bit lighter weight and a little bit more comfortable, and this one is the performance version of it. It's going to be a little heavier but have more stability. So make sure that you guys check out the Court Strike and the Court Strike Pro at selkirk.com, and if you guys have any questions on either of these models, drop them in the comments below.
Now then, that leads us to the next big question. What's your pickleball story? Everybody's got a pickleball story. What's the Byron Fressel story?
It's a very simple one. In 2010, my wife and I moved to Florida. She had retired before me, but I had my company and I could run it from Florida. And I essentially retired a year later. And we moved into this community that had pickleball courts. And this older gentleman and his wife invited her and myself, my wife and I, to come and play. And they put a beating on us. And I said to him after we were through, I said, you know, that's not going to happen again. Where can I get those paddles you have in your hand? He happened to be the sales representative or distributor for S-Type pickleball paddles. I know if you're familiar with S-Type. Is the
Steve Wong's company. I sure do.
Steve Wong's company, yep. That became Onyx afterwards. He rebranded the company to Onyx. And so I bought my first paddle. Was a Z5, S-Type Z5 composite paddle. And my wife got, I think, the Prowler, which is a smaller version of one of his paddles. And we went and practiced and came back about a month later and beat this same couple again, beat them badly. And 2 weeks later, they told us we couldn't play together anymore in the community because we were beating everyone. But I fell in love with the game. And why I fell in love with it, at the time, I couldn't play racquetball anymore. I had ended up having a spinal fusion, which curtailed my racquetball capability and my volleyball ability. And so I was kind of moping around trying to find something else to do. I also rode my bike, but it wasn't giving me the kind of challenges that I wanted in a competitive sport. And so having discovered pickleball, I my wife and I went all in on it. I mean, literally all in. We, after being in the community for 2 years, we decided to get involved in an RV under recommendation of a friend of ours, Dean Loveland. And if you know Dean out in Arizona there. And Dean said, you know, you guys can take trips in an RV and you can enjoy all the pickleball you want. So we took off, we bought the RV, we went west to Arizona, played in our first nationals, I tell you, man, it was a totally eye-opener, because in Florida here, we played age only. But then I went out west to Arizona, and it's skill level. I have no idea what my skill level was supposed to be.
Right.
But I met Chris, what's Chris's last name? But he was the director for the ratings, director for USAPA. And he says, as of today, you're a 4-5 player. You and your wife are both 4-5 players. I said, oh, boy. Okay. But needless to say, we enjoyed the sport, got into it, and I got pretty good pretty fast, and became a 5-0 player about a year later. Getting to be a 5-0 was not an easy thing in Arizona, because those guys did not allow you to come in and play with the big dogs, that is, you know, didn't allow you to come and play with them unless you were a 5-0. So
right.
Having attained that, I was happy to have made the grade.
Well, I can testify a little bit to the grade. Your wife is always she's left a little burr under my saddle at that 2015 championships. She and her partner knocked a woman named Jackie Fagery and I in the semifinals of that tournament. And so I've always held that against Marcia. And so it's fun. All right. Now we need to get into the fact that you have been deep, deep, deep in the sport of pickleball. And we're going to get to the referee part of it. But at what point did you start to really become, I mean, you're high visibility. You've been seen on more TV screens officiating matches than I think probably anybody that I can think of. What motivated you to get into kind of the organizational administrative side of pickleball?
Well, I've always, like I said, I've always been involved in the back office, the back end of most of the sports I've been involved with. And so... Refereeing for me was a natural thing. I was a national volleyball referee while I was a player, but I was more so interested in the refereeing aspect of it. I could have gone on to be an international volleyball referee had I stayed with it. But being in Arizona there, which was, I couldn't have been in a better place to become involved in the back end of pickleball. That is, you had the headquarters for USAPA at the time there in Arizona. You had all the big name players, Yoda Friedenberg, Steve Wong, Gigi LeMaster. I mean, all these players that were there that were involved in the sports at a deep level. And so having associated with them, I was able to learn some of the ropes and understand what it took to become involved in pickleball. And my natural acumen or curiosity to be involved in the back end of things led me to become a referee. And then both my wife and I became referees. As a matter of fact, she was the referee before, a certified referee before I did, because I was a little headstrong. They wanted to make changes in the referee and tell me to use a clip. I could do it with my fingers best, but finally, I came around and decided, I'll use the clip. And that's only when they allowed me to become a certified referee, having gone through the process. But, you know, at what I would do at we both of us at tournaments, most people would leave after a certain time. And my wife and I would stick around, end up reffing the last matches. They'll say, Byron, can you ref this final? Can you ref that final? Can you ref this final? And, you know, I was always willing to do it. I mean, we had nothing else to do. Pickleball was our life, essentially. And, you know, we were living in an RV, so it's not like we got to go home and fend for the, you know, take care of the yard or the house or anything like that. So
right.
We stuck around on those late nights. And I guess I developed a reputation at that time of being a very good referee and a trusted referee, one that a lot of the players respected and was felt confident enough that the decisions that I made was one that was the best one for that given situation. So being in that position, I became well known. I got a call one day from the CEO for Escalade Sports. And he said, this was in 2015, that Escalade Sports had just bought Onyx from Steve Wong. And he said, Byron, you know, we've been talking to a lot of people, and every time your name kept coming up, and we would like you to be to head up a pickleball team that we want to put together. And I said, you know, but his first thing was that we'd like to offer you a job. And I said, no, I'm not looking for a job. He said, no, it's not like that. It's going to be something that you would like. You could be wherever you are and conduct this. And then he explained to me what they were looking for, to manage this pickleball team, to be the ambassador for Onyx Sports. And and it's an opportunity. They were going to pay me well to do this. And I was shocked at the number that he threw out at me. And I said, where do I sign? And so I signed the agreement, and I started putting together the team. And, you know, I was thinking the other day, how many players came through my management for the Onyx team. You know, I had Zane Navratil, Callie Smith, Lucy Kovalova, Matt Wright, Dylan Frazier. As a matter of fact, I had Dylan before he became a star. Mm-hmm. You know, I can go on and on, several players that have risen to prominence in the pickleball world that came through the Onyx team. And, you know, then we had a whole cadre of amateur players. At one point, I was managing over 120 players. Back then, we were, I would say, probably the largest group of players that was sponsored by any one of the paddle manufacturers, which back then was only the paddle manufacturers were sponsoring players. And, you know, it was a good run. I stayed with Onyx for 7 years. And then I became involved in different aspects of pickleball, from being the chairperson for the Pro Advisory Committee. This is a committee that was put together to advise the tours on how to promote the sport and to what the players would like to see done, how it should be done from a spectator's point of view and management's point of view, and so forth. But having spent 7 years with Onyx, I got a call one day from Ken Herman, and he said, Byron, I would like you to be my head referee for, I'm putting together this tour. And, you know, I've got some advisors, that, you know, it would be you, Melissa McCurley, myself, and a couple of other persons. And I said, you know, Ken, I've heard about you. And, you know, this is something that excites me because I want to be involved in this. Now, let me just back up for one quick second. I don't know if you're familiar with a gentleman by the name of John Gullo.
Mm-hmm. I do know John.
John was the first guy that really put together a professional pickleball tour or professional pickleball. He had Tournament of Champions, which was the largest prize purse at that time in pickleball. And he put together the PPF. The PPF, I was a board member of the PPF, and John brought on several persons, from Simone Jarjean, you know, several of the guys, I've forgotten some of their names right now. But we started running the PPF and we were doing well, but there was a little conflict between the PPF and USA Pickleball. In the 2015 Nationals, it was supposed to have been the pro week and then the regular amateur week. Unfortunately, USA Pickleball didn't see it fit to promote the Pro Week because there was an impression that the PPF didn't have money. And you don't tell John Gullo he doesn't have money. and so he had decided to put $50,000 up in price purse and was going to pay the USA Pickleball $25,000. But they turned it down. He said, Byron, I want you to run the tournament for me. And I said, okay, fine. And that didn't happen, but that was the forerunner to the APP. And having wanted to be involved in some form of pickleball, professional pickleball, and Ken Herman got in touch with me, I said, I jumped on the opportunity and said, Ken, you can come to me, and this is sink or swim with the APP.
So that is, you know, that is, you're segueing perfectly into what I want to talk about. One of the things I would like you to describe to me is sort of what the breadth and range of things are that the APP does, because I know that's going to lead into the international refereeing conversation. But before that, what is up the APP doing? What kind of events does it operate? That type of thing.
The APP is is Association of Pickleball Players. We used to be known as the Association of Pickleball Professionals, and we decided to rebrand it to be Players because we wanted to make sure that we were inclusive of the amateurs. Didn't want to feel like we were just a pro tour and the amateurs were secondhand and, you know, they're out there in left field. And so we rebranded the name of the organization to the Association of Pickleball Players. And as the name states, it's a professional tour, but it's also a tour that caters to amateurs and want to provide a great experience for both amateurs and professionals. We run the full gamut of different formats. We run singles, men's singles. That when I say men's, it's under 50 men's singles, men's doubles, women's singles, women's doubles, mixed doubles. And then we also a big supporter of the seniors. We have senior men, singles, doubles, and mixed doubles. And then we have the full width and length and breadth of amateur matches that we perform. One of the things that we prided ourselves on when I came on board with Ken, I wanted to make sure that we were providing a great experience for all the players. And we did our best to referee every single match. Sometimes it was a case of where we didn't have enough referees to referee every single match. So, but we refereed as many matches as we could with what we have. And sometimes we made some fiscal decisions as to how we would provide referees for the tournaments. But I think overall, our focus on the APP is to provide a great experience for every single player that come into our tournament, and to be an upstanding tour, and to be straightforward with players, be straightforward with our sponsors, with our staff, and everyone that's involved with APP.
You know, I'll tell you, I think you're helping me in my interview here, because really now the big subject that I wanted to chat with you is you've just recently stepped away from the directorship of refereeing at the APP domestically, and you've chosen to take the lead of coaching, teaching, refereeing for the APP internationally. Tell me about what you're doing, where you're going, and frankly, what you're seeing. We hear so much about the global action in pickleball. I'd love to talk to somebody who's actually been there and worked with those people. Tell me what the globe is like for you.
Well, you know, when we first into this international thing, the APP had relationships with the English Open. We were also involved with the Australian, with the Swedish Open. And so there were many tours, international tours that we were involved with. But the recognition on these tours is that it was every player for themselves, kind of vis-a-vis the U.S. Open, because at least the U.S. Open had referees for every pro match. Okay. The players on these international tours were pretty much fending for themselves. And so Ken and the APP, you know, Ken and Mike Poliski made a decision that we want to push the officiating at the international level. And being something that I wanted to do, I always like to start up something. You know, I started up the refereeing management for the APP at the domestic level. And so I felt that we had a great guy to replace me at the domestic level. And so it gave me the opportunity to go off internationally and to do my thing. And as I traveled outside, my first trip outside of the U.S. was to India. The Indian Open was powered by the APP. And we were looking forward to a great relationship with the Indian Open at the time. And when I got there, I'm supposed to train these referees. Well, God bless their heart. They tried. But these guys were not experienced in terms of you knowing how to play pickleball that well. The candidates that they provided me to assist me in refereeing, However, there are about six candidates that really shone out of the 20-something that I got. And I worked with them literally day and night, from morning to night, and to the point where I felt confident that they, one or two of them, could call the finals of the tournament for the pro finals. And I would stand in the background and just observe and correct things if need be. And so it was a challenge, but we succeeded to the most part in getting it done. However, things fell through a little bit with that that tournament, and we had to kind of pivot a little bit. So my next trip was to China. And but before I go off to China, just a little bit more about India. In February, I will tell you the talent that I saw in India from a player's perspective, because we had some pros there that were teaching these players. It was very surprising to me. I didn't expect to see the level of play that I saw at the time. So I also felt that if given the level of play, I would also get the same level of refereeing. But it didn't happen so much so then, but, you know, the goal was to, you know, keep on plodding, you know, trotting along the road and see how we can do it. And so I formed a group that we had Zoom calls. I mean, you know, the time difference between India and us, it's like I think 12 and a half hours. It's the only country that has this half an hour system that kind of throws me off balance a little bit. And for the first 3 weeks, we were doing these Zoom calls and working with them in refereeing. And then the news came that Global Pickleball Sports was no longer going to be working with the APP. They were going to be working with another one of our competitors. And so, you know, I had to drop that and turn around and do something differently. So we formed an alliance with a gentleman by the name of Pranav Kohli, who you know very well. Mm-hmm. And Pranav was putting together this this league, international league, and different tournaments. And so he asked me if I can help them out. So the first trip was to China. And I tell you, that trip to China was an eye-opener for me, because the one thing about the Chinese, when they commit to something, they commit to it. And I went to several cities in China. I went to Dalian, Beijing, Guangzhou, Chongqing, Zhuhai, and all these places I went, we had these referees who would literally travel with the tour, okay? We would do training, player training in all these cities, and we'll have a little tournament afterwards, and I would do 2 days of training with these referees. Many of them were college students, which was a big difference from, you know, we have more of an elderly population, an older population, that referees here in the U.S., and it's because, you know, most of them are retired. They have got the disposable income to travel and go to these tournaments, as opposed to a lot of the younger people here in the U.S. They still got to maintain a job, or if they've now elevated themselves beyond just a job and playing professionally, they don't have the time to referee. So, but in China, the universities were committed to having their young people referee. And so I had about my first stop in Dalian, I had about, I would say about 15 candidates that came out for training. And these ladies and men took it seriously. I mean, they literally took it seriously. So much so that I did not expect to see some of the candidates in Dalian travel to Beijing. And at the Beijing training, here comes about five or six of them from Dalian, plus those from Beijing, which again, we always average somewhere around 17 candidates to train. And I said, wow, this is impressive. Then we went to Chongqing, and Chongqing, another group of the same candidates followed us there. Not only were they following us to learn how to referee, but they were also following to train under Megan and Ryla, you know, to learn to play pickleball. And so we conducted classes, you know, all these places we got the opportunity to use the pro players or the players that Megan and Ryla are training as the for the practical side of the training. We have classroom sessions, and at the end of the training, they all get a certificate. They all got a certificate from the host that brought Marcia and myself there, Yui and Yuki. And they were so happy to have gotten that certificate. You know, then we started when we went to Guangzhou. In Guangzhou, there was another university there that sent about 12 candidates. And so I had about 22 candidates in Guangzhou. In Guangzhou, I think I got the best of the best in China for refereeing. I mean, these young people were sharp. They were on point to the point that literally after I left China, we continued online training. I was thankful that they didn't try to make me get up at 2 o'clock in the morning to do training for them 13 hours ahead of time. But we worked it out where I would start the training here at 10 p.m. at night. And we did 2 hours, and it was kind of like afternoon, midday afternoon for them. So, but to give you a synopsis of China, China is committed to pickleball in a big sense. However, in China, you've got the politics. Nothing happens in China without the government or the local government being involved. And that can be restricting in some ways, but it can also be very helpful because once you got the commitment from the local government, they make everything happen. Okay. And everyone can move forward with confidence. And so right now we're still training referees in China. And I can tell you without any concern that I can put any one of those 15 referees that I felt are good enough, I can put them out in a pro match here in the U.S. At any point in time.
You know, something that you and I had talked about earlier that I think is really important to express is guide our viewers as to how big a deal unified refereeing is around the world, what that does to contribute to the overall growth of pickleball by having all those referees understanding the game and the rules the same way.
Oh, yes. I mean, I think that my objective and one of my visions is to have officiating on the international level that is equivalent to the U.S. And so much so that I would like to see that if we take a tournament like an APP tour to Vietnam, that in Vietnam, I could feel confident that every referee that steps onto the court to referee a match is going to referee it by the same standards of the U.S. You may have, and this is one of the things I discovered in China and in India, there are slight nuances into how they like to referee, you know, and it's more of a cultural thing than it is from a deviation from what the USA Pickleball does. It's literally cultural. Their language, they might say something because English is not their first language. So, but the essence of pickleball, you know, the timeout procedures is the same. The starting of the matches are it's just the same. The between points commentary is the same. The pre-match briefing will be the same. The end of the match commentary will be the same. And, you know, and then in terms of dealing with rules interpretation, that is paramount. That will be the same. They might say a different word in some instances because of the language barrier, but the essence of it for that international community is still the same as it is in the U.S. pickleball. And so if we can achieve that, you know, that will be the holy grail as far as I'm concerned, where we go to Vietnam, China, India, Thailand, England, Australia, and every referee, whether they're certified under the Global Pickleball Federation or they're certified under USA Pickleball, they all do the same thing based on the same handbook procedures that we have here.
You know, and I think that that's, it wasn't until you and I had talked about that that it had me thinking. I played a lot of tennis in my lifetime, and I had a friend at one point in my life who was a global tennis umpire. And it was a huge privilege for him to earn enough points to be able to go to the big international tournaments and be an umpire at them. And it got me thinking that the idea of, let's say, an American who is a referee, certified referee, mixing his destination travel to pickleball with Asian or Middle Eastern or African tournaments, and the same thing for foreigners being able to come to America and say, oh, well, I'm going to ref some matches while I'm there. What a cool way for people to be part of the pickleball culture. I think that's just phenomenal.
That is will be so awesome to see, like you said, someone from Kenya officiating a match at Nationals, or someone from Vietnam officiating a match at the U.S. Open. And the players will have no fear or concern that they're going to do something completely different than what they're accustomed.
Yeah, no, I think that's terrific. And you know, one of the things that I want to do, and I'm going to take just a tiny little break here. I want to ask those of you that are watching this, if you like what you're seeing, hit the subscribe button, follow us, see what we're doing, and take the opportunity to comment. Tell me about what you think about what we're talking about. Tell me what you'd like to see in the future on this show and who the kind of people are you'd like to see talking about their visions of the future of pickleball, because we're now going to step into what I think is the great big giant obstacle in the world, and that is we need global unification in the sport of pickleball. I'll throw that out as a declarative statement. Are you in agreement with that?
Yes, for me? Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, the rank and file player in the United States here, everyone knows that this sport ought to be in the Olympics. It ought to be in the Olympics. And I always have a little chuckle or smile and say, well, yeah, it would be fantastic for pickleball to be in the Olympics. You know, people see break dancing in the Olympics, you know, cornhole in the Olympics, like what the heck? Pickleball is a little more substantial than those events, and they're in the Olympics. Why isn't pickleball in the Olympics? Well, it's not as easy as it is. It's just as saying it for to happen.
Right.
You got to have unification, because the IOC is going to look to one organization, and that one organization is one they're going to count on to bring to the table all that they need to have this sport become a viable option in the Olympics. And if pickleball cannot come to that understanding of having one organization, it will be a long road to hoe for pickleball to get into the Olympics.
Yeah, it's interesting with the dominance of the interviews that I do on this show are really the business people who are in the business or who are growing the sport with business purposes or business ideas in mind. And I've gotten myself to a point that I think a lot of people have lost sight in the business side of pickleball of where the market growth for their business opportunity comes from growing the sport. It's really people like you and USA Pickleball and APP's organizations that are growing and adding numbers of people. That's market growth. And I would really like to begin to see a way that we could begin to get the business of pickleball recognizing that it needs to financially support the growth of pickleball, because that grows their market share. And so I really want to see that start to come. Something I did want to ask you on the unification side of things, the IOC getting the eyes on from the Olympics would be just monumental for our sport, because, and then it would go globally. I don't think most people realize for us to be a recognized sport by the IOC, we have to have pickleball being played in 75 countries on four continents. And so some of that is now a conference that I'll be at here very soon will be in Dubai, which will be the first global pickleball conference that has been done, because the business interests in the Middle East and in Asia are beginning to say, oh my God, what happened in America? what will happen if that happens here in India and in China and Vietnam and Laos, all of the countries that pickleball is now starting to grow in, it will grow the sport and make it a big better business opportunity, but we need unification. When we talk about unification, guide me a little bit as to when I say that word, what does that mean to you? What do you think has to happen to achieve some kind of global governance of pickleball?
Well, I think it first starts with everyone getting on the same page. You cannot think of yourself as being a one-off organization and feel like you're going to get anything accomplished because you feel like you've got money behind you and you can do whatever you want. The one thing that I know, and having been in other sports and getting to the Olympics, it's that it's not just the money, but it's the relationships that you have. And if you don't have those relationships, if people can't come together and have those relationships, it's not going to go anywhere. The key thing to really get pickleball unified, it's, you know, the big countries, the countries with money, because right now, internationally, they really don't have a lot of money in the sport. Without the money, a lot of it is going to be stagnated and you're going to be going around in small circles. But as you talk about the business of pickleball, if large corporations can see the value in pickleball being an Olympic sport and start backing it financially, I think we can see where the opportunity to get into Olympics becomes a lot easier. Right now, as it is, there are too many, chiefs wanting to control power. And, you know, you have a faction over here, a faction over there, a faction, and we're all tugging at each other. I think the organization that, for me, in looking at what's happening, Global Pickleball Federation is the one that has a real vision and has a mandate, so to speak, to create this opportunity for pickleball to be unified. There's got to be a putting aside of the petty differences that that is occurring in the sport. I'm not diminishing anyone's value when I say petty differences, because, you know, whether it's England or the European Pickleball Federation, they have a right to feel the way they do. You know, there are those who feel that some organizations are a little too powerful and they don't want to kowtow to that organization. That is all well and good. But at the end of the day, if some giving and taking does not occur, you're going to be butting heads all day long. And we're going to be in the same position today as we were 3 years ago, and we will be 3 years from now.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I've had Frank Errico on from the European Pickleball Federation. I've had Karen Mitchell on from English Pickleball. And I've had long opportunities to talk with them. And it just, I find that we've got to find a way to get everybody to start to separate the ownership of pickleball from the governance of pickleball. Sometimes I think when people hear me talk about my interest in unification, they think that there shouldn't be competition between companies or things. That's not it at all. But our governing body, just like FIFA in soccer, the ITF in tennis, we have to have one governing body. And frankly, the success that it can bring to the sport is far greater than any individual can benefit from their trying to hold or covet something. So I'm very much with you. You know, something that I think is kind of interesting, and when I have this conversation with people, and I'd like your opinion, is if we don't find governance specifically, so I think in terms of things like we're missing major global sponsors, the big companies that can be, you know, that can be a factor in the world. I look at my personal list of companies that I think should be helping to sponsor pickleball: PepsiCo, Coke, InBev, Mercedes-Benz, BMW, Honda, IKEA, Colgate, Amazon. Well, they're not going to ever support something that's fragmented or broken or that there's disputes or arguments in it. So I think, to me, there's such a huge upside if we can find unification, that that's when the big players, because that's what you see in the Olympics, is you see the major world brands getting behind it. And we have so many positives about our sport that I think they would embrace us if we ever can get this unification going. And you know, it's, you can tell it's kind of a passion project of mine, and I know it is of yours. Isn't Ron Ponder does a lot of the same kind of things that you do for USA Pickleball. Is that true?
Yeah, well, Ron Ponder is the director for the GPF, officiating for the GPF, not necessarily for USA Pickleball. We all work closely, our organization work closely with USA Pickleball, being the fact that we are from the United States. And so, but the one thing that we cannot do, and it's, you know, and my conversations with certain individuals internationally, it's they don't want to feel like USA Pickleball is in control of everything. Okay. And so you've got to be very careful in how you're presenting yourself as an American to some of these organizations, because, you know, the big bad American coming here to control us and to take what we have and want to tell us what to do. And so I think Ron would tell you that he always leads with the GPF, which he's the director of officiating for that.
Okay.
We do the same thing in terms of training. Ron goes to a lot of these countries and train their officials. And here, him and I will collaborate when there are opportunities for us to collaborate on training, you know, the different individuals. You know, we did that at the English Open. We were co-head referees there. He's been to China also, and the same people that invited him to China has also invited me to come there. So there are going to be opportunities back and forth. Now, the one thing that I do not do when I start operating internationally in GPF territory, I always make sure I clear it with Ron first.
Okay. Well, okay. But in that piece, so as you're talking about, so I've met Ron numerous times. I've obviously known you a long time. Where does the budget come for all of these countries to get refereeing? How does that happen?
That's a $64 million question. Even in the United States, as you well know, refereeing is not an inexpensive venture. To have a referee for every match out there, it's not, it is very expensive. And so when you think of paying a referee $20 a match, or whether it's $250 or $300 a day, multiply that times 40 something referees, if you have that many, depending on the number of courts, and for 4 days, sometimes 5 days, that's expensive. You can run into $50,000-$60,000, at any given time, and then you multiply that times several tournaments. You know, that's a big chunk. You know, in the early days, as you well know, you know, refereeing was a volunteer thing, and so tournaments can afford to say $35 per player and $10 per event. $35 for registration, $10 per event, and most of the places where they were playing these tournaments either gave it to them free or was a very small fee for rental. Gone are those days. To rent some of these venues, you're talking in excess, you know, six figures to rent some of these venues. And so to add on top of that, paying referees $50,000-$60,000 per tournament can be very challenging. And so that kind of money, on the international level, it's not there.
Right.
It's not there.
But when you have gone to India or China, where does that budget come from? Do you pay that out of your pocket? Do you get help with that?
Yeah, I get help. They pay for me to come. They pay my airfare, my hotel, and also meals. I thankfully, I've never had to literally have never had to spend a dime in any place that I've gone.
Good.
So that's one positive. The fact that what I do is a blessing from the APP. Mm-hmm. The APP gives me the freedom to go to these stores and not to have to tack on additional fees for these candidates to train them as long as they're working with the APP. Okay. So it's not a big deal for me to go over there because, you know, thankfully the APP compensates me, you know, very well. And I can turn that around and now go overseas. As long as the international community pays for my travel and lodging, right. I don't even count the food so much so because it's just like being back home. You get food the way you see fit. But once those are covered, and in many instances, they either cover me or they cover both Marcia and myself. I'm up for traveling.
Well, and the thing that I think, and the reason I ask those questions is that I think people forget sometimes that all of the people that are in the sport of pickleball, I don't think there's anybody here getting rich, but the idea of everything takes a budget. The conference that I'll be at in Dubai, I'm really looking forward to having an opportunity to talk to a lot of the very serious business investor class from around the world about how the sport has had this enormous growth in America without a lot of money behind it initially. But now that it's been demonstrated what it is and it's becoming a global sport, it can continue to grow exponentially around the world, but we need to support it. We need to help it just like every other sport in existence. And I sometimes get a little tired of people wishing that all of this stuff could happen, but it just didn't cost anything. And that's just not right. the reality of life. In as you go out here into the pickleball space, you're going to be continuing to go forward with different kinds of events. Give me your kind of synopsis of what you think could happen in particularly Asia. You've been over there a number of different countries. What do you see that you think will happen?
Well, you know, there are multiple factions working in Asia. You've got, you know, from the Chinese aspect, there are several parties in China that are trying to bring pickleball to China. There's a group in Shanghai. There's a group in Guangzhou, in Beijing. Again, a lot of this is predicated on the local government and what kind of relationships we have with the local government. Then, you know, you come to India. India is more like the U.S. in the sense that it's a commercially driven country. It's not so politically where the government is involved in the sport. Private industry has got to be the one that makes it happen. So, excuse me. So from that aspect, I think that these countries and these entities that are out there trying to make things happen for the sport in their country, if the individuals who want to see it happen can get the local businesses and the local governments in China to become involved in it, I think that it would help tremendously. But ask me that question one more time, because there's another thought that I have in mind that I want to share with you.
I was asking you what your thoughts were of what you think is going to happen in Asia, as an example, with growing the sport over there and how it will happen.
Yeah. So bringing these entities together, the private investors or the persons who have the vision, okay, and getting that person with the vision coming to some business entity and saying, guys, this is what I have envision for the sport in India or in Thailand or in China. If they can convince these entities, I think it will happen. I'll give you, like in the U.S. here, it's not an easy road to hoe to convince major corporations that they want to spend millions of dollars on this sport. You got to have dedicated resources. People who are 100% committed to making it happen. You can't just be there today and then I'll see you next 3 weeks and then a month later. No, you have to have persistence and follow on to make sure that you can close these deals. You have also got to convince these industry people that pickleball is ready to take that next step. Pickleball is ready to explode, and there could be good financial rewards for you. Some businesses look for the financial rewards. Some businesses only care about the exposure. What kind of an exposure I get? They'll find their own way of financially rewarding themselves. But if they don't get the exposure, then it means nothing to them. So to take that, to transfer that internationally, it all depends on the country. Like in India, is very similar to the U.S. If, you know, I know Pran has worked and closed the deal with the Indian Times. Okay. And if the Indian Times stick to their commitment of paying the kind of money that Pran told me that they're going to pay, that's a big feather in the Indian pickleball's cap. Okay. Mm-hmm. In Vietnam, a lot of private businesses are getting involved. They have built more pickleball courts in Vietnam than they've built anywhere else in the world on a per capita basis. They've got well over 1,000 pickleball courts in that small country.
Yeah.
And there's a tournament practically every weekend, or several tournaments every weekend. So that kind of a commitment and that kind of zeal, that zest, that drive to make it happen is going to bode well for Vietnam in the future, because when businesses can see what's happening and the enthusiasm that's being displayed by the players and the tournament directors and the owners of these tournaments, they can do nothing but say, we want to be a part of that experience. Okay?
Yeah.
China is a little different. You got to develop that relationship with the local government and AFDC. Don't get it wrong or get it twisted. These local governments are in for profit. This is not necessarily because it's a communist country that they're not interested in profits. They got to make money.
Right.
And so if you can work that political angle and get them to convince that this is worth it, I think it explodes again in China.
You know, you're really making the absolute case that I think is the big factor for why unification is so important, is that if our sport can get unified, it makes it much easier and much clearer for all of these companies around the world. You know, I've heard the China conversation quite a bit. I believe the fastest way to get China fully on board with pickleball is to have so many of the other countries in Asia moving along with it, where it just becomes part of the current culture of what's going on in sports and recreation and activity, because we know that any place we can get it installed, it's cool, it's fun, it's healthy, it's active, and it's the most social sport that anybody ever saw. So that's why I'm kind of a believer, and you're making my case for unification, Byron. I want to thank you for that.
Yeah, you know, what is your value proposition? Okay, what is the value proposition that you have for this sport in any given country? And I think once these countries can define their value proposition, it is helpful when they start to go trying to tackle the money part of it. From the player standpoint, it's a no-brainer. You put a paddle and tape a court and put up a temporary net, and you find four players, you're going to automatically find eight players, and you'll find 16 players. Okay? That's a no-brainer. The part of it that is the challenging part is, can you sustain that over and over? Okay, and because it's becoming more expensive now to host tournaments, okay, no longer, if I might digress for a moment, I remember when I was managing the Onyx team, and these quote-unquote pro players we have right now, they were willing to go to tournaments as long as Onyx was willing to pay for some travel for them, pay matching winnings, and give them a stipend. They were cool with that, okay? It changed. That one player said to me when I was laying out the schedule for the next year of the places you would go and you sign, putting together their contractual agreement, there was a big tournament in Arizona called, what's that big tournament in Arizona that everyone went to? The Grand Canyon, no, is it Grand Canyon? I think it was Grand Canyon. Games, and every pickleball player worth his or her salt went to that tournament. But that tournament didn't have him any money in it. It wasn't paying anything. And this player said to me, "Oh, you can scratch me off of that. This is a tournament that I valued, the company valued you being there because we're putting money into that tournament from an advertising standpoint. And we expect our representative, you being the player, to be there." And their response was, "No, I'm not going unless they're going to be paying me money. I am not going." And that became the trend.
Right. And candidly, in the profession, yeah. I've been in the sports industry my entire working life. That's what professional athletes should expect. But I'm not talking about, you know, in the greater scheme of things, in all of the matrix that I see in pickleball, maybe 3% of the entire community of pickleball players follow professional sports in pickleball. That's the, to me, that's the frosting on the cake. It's the health, the wellness, the community that happens with the game. When guys like you and I go back to the early days of pickleball, we loved it, not because we were making money off it, not because we were getting some huge adulation. We loved it. And we loved the people that we met. And that's yep. what I'm seeing in the global explosion and the senior business people. Everybody wants to talk about the pro game, and that's fun. And the money that Pranav Kohli and the Times Group in India are putting together in the pickleball world rankings is enormous. It's a small factor for whether the sport can grow to 20 million, 40 million, 60 million, 100 million people in India. That'll grow because of the core tenets of the game of pickleball. And that's the area that I think the advertisers could care less about 1,000 pro athletes to advertise to them. It's only the hundreds of thousands and millions of players and spectators that the sport overlaps on. And that's where I'm saying the PepsiCos and the BMWs and the major destination travel companies, they're looking, they need big, big numbers of people. And that's what pickleball can deliver if we can help the sport grow that way. And that's when the global brands, I know of a couple of global brands that have been looking closely at pickleball, and they're nervous about if they sign up sponsoring on one side of the team, that they offend somebody else on the other side of the team. And socially and politically and societally, we're so wrapped up in that as a cultural phenomenon, not just in the United States. That's why I would like to see the people who really are supposed to be the adults in the room come to terms, figure out how to move forward for the betterment of the sport. That will take care of feeding everybody that needs to be fed along the way.
And you're right. You know, pickleball being professional pickleball being maybe about 3% of the population of pickleball. It's not a significant amount, but it, like you say, it's a tail wagging the dog in many instances, because that's what a lot of tournaments lead with. Because if we can get the big name players coming to Absolutely. Their tournament, you know, you heard the mantra for one of the tours, you know, you want to play, then you want to see the big names, you can come here. Okay. But at the end of the day, you know, I was in the restaurant business for a while, and there was always the conversation at any restaurateur between alcohol and food. You know, food was not a big profit item in the restaurant business. Alcohol was your profit. I mean, you can sell a 750 liter bottle of alcohol and make, you know, 400-500% on it. Mm-hmm. Okay, food, you're making 10%, if that much. But the thing that food gave you was sustainability and frequency, because everyone was hungry. They had to eat. Not everyone needs to drink alcohol. And I equate food to the amateurs and alcohol to the pros. The amateurs, it's like the food and sustenance for every tournament. At one point in time, you know, it was the conversation that, well, the amateurs are paying for the pros. That is no longer the case, okay? But there was a bit of resentment when amateurs felt that they were paying for all these big-name pros, and sure. they didn't want to be a part of that experience. And so I think, you know, at APP, we did a study and found out that 98% of the people could not name you who the number one player in pickleball was.
My case in point.
Okay. You go to an advertiser, you know, or a sponsor, and they want to advertise on a name person. They don't care. They want to advertise in pickleball.
Right. Right.
Okay. That's what they care about. Whether whoever you bring to the table to say, well, I have this person or that person, is irrelevant to them. Okay.
And I think that one of the things that I have to say on behalf of the APP and all the traveling that I do and all the people I interact with in pickleball, I have heard very consistently from amateur tournament players that in their mind, the player experience that they get at APP tournaments is the premier event in the sport because they feel like they're being catered to. And I think that to me, everything in sports really needs to be, whether we're at a player level, a spectator level, or professional athletes, it's all about what is the experience that you have in the game. And it's the experience in the game that I believe has been so unique in pickleball that has taken it really over the last 15, 17 years from a sport that nobody ever heard of to one of the fastest growing sports in the world with no end in sight. Well, I think we're preaching to the choir a little bit here, Byron. You know, I want to, before we sign off, I do want to say thank you so much to Selkirk and Selkirk TV. Without them, I couldn't do the future of pickleball. It's so great to be with a company that works as hard, and the only thing they do is in the sport of pickleball. Selkirk, thank you very much. Byron, I want to say thank you very much for joining us. I look forward to seeing you out there in the world, as I know we always will cross paths. Keep the global thing going. I think we're really just on the precipice of the next blow up, and I'll let you have the final word.
Thank you very much for having me on, Paul. You know, like I said, we've gone back, you know, quite some time. And, you know, you're one of the guys that I've always found to be one that was very open and very communicative with me. And you went deeper than just hitting a ball across the net. But from my aspect, my focus and my energy is really driving the officiating at an international level. And as we talked about, having a level of consistency across the globe in officiating, having an official from whether it's Vietnam, China, India, Pakistan, officiate to match in Toronto or in New York or anywhere, and vice versa, and have it be the same, have the players feel it's the same thing they're getting and of no concern. They would have no concern whatsoever. So I'm going to keep pushing it. And I know the APP is gung-ho about pushing it. And you're going to be hearing a few things coming out in the near future. You know, we've got a tournament coming up in the Cayman Islands.
Oh, nice.
In March. You know, I'm going to be over there. And so, I, you know, for those who want to go and have a nice vacation and play some pickleball, hey, go on the APP website and sign up for that tournament in Cayman Islands. I think you will enjoy it. Okay.
Perfect. You know, thank you very much. We will stay in touch. And to all of you watching, thanks so much for watching. Don't forget to subscribe. Thank you. Bye-bye.
My pleasure. Thanks.